The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. Hour two, G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk about some Rangers because they are 1.5 games ahead of Seattle. They are sitting here in first place and finished that first half of the season with some pretty good momentum. What are the five things we learned about your Rangers and their unlikely ascent to first place at the All-Star break? This is Sean McFarland in the morning news. We're sitting at half over there at the stadium, and Spain leads France 1-0. Would be a slight upset. I think Spain went off at like plus 125, and Spain and France was like minus 150. Wooly Bully is up there at Cosm enjoying it, and he'll be on his way to join us here on the show when it goes final.
Yeah, In just the 45 minutes we did see of the soccer action, it looked like Spain more quality than France. And France is a team that is offensively can be just so explosive with the passing, the ability for how they're able to stretch the field and be able to get guys going upfield. And Spain did a really nice job of not letting them get anything really going. And on the offensive attack, Spain just better in the France end than what we saw with the opposite way.
And I've been disappointed and at times critical of Lamine Yamal, the teenage sensation for Spain.
He drew the penalty.
He's been fantastic. Drew the penalty. He's been dangerous. I think he's locked in, you know. And that could spell trouble for France here as they need a goal to equalize in the next 45 minutes or they will be done for, and we'll miss the final for the first time in 12 years. Yeah. Number one, the bounce back candidates have bounced back, and this is something that I think we had our fingers crossed for in spring training, but none of us really believed it, did we? You're talking Berger, Young, and Peterson.
Yeah, Jock. I think we were all ready to give up on Jock. For sure.
Yeah.
And most of us for Young as well. I think there was some Berger excitement having Schumacher back. Berger talking about some of the adjustments that he made with his swing, getting the Pilates body going a little bit. You felt like that's a guy who the power would come back for him. But for Young and for Peterson, I think those two are huge surprises.
Yeah, Young just looked kind of like he was a flash in the pan, maybe in the World Series year, but couldn't get healthy enough to be dependable. Yeah. Peterson, we were like, well, he got old and washed up and isn't going to work hard enough to find his way back in his mid-30s to being a dangerous batter. He's making me eat crow on both of those beliefs. But yeah, Berger, because he's young and still wants it and only had the one poor season. Before that, the two previous seasons, he'd combined to hit like 65 home runs. So I was willing to be optimistic about a Berger, but salute to, I think, CY for showing faith in his guy, and salute to the players.
I remember when we interviewed CY, we were out there at the ballpark, and I apologized to him because this is a joke. You know, this whole thing with Berger, we talked about that. Remember, I said, hey, first off, just want to say, oh, you know, apology for my thoughts about Berger and stuff. And he's like, well, you know, he's capable player. He was nice about it, you know. But I think the whole thing with him, with Peterson leading off and all, I thought, what a joke that was. But, man, I mean, there are some moves that they have made that have just come up great.
Peterson sitting on 15 home runs now. And had 9 a year ago.
That's crazy. He's kind of close to 30.
And they've kind of figured out, though, that when, like, even though he's showing, like, how he can hit, they put Foscue in there now as a pitch hitter, and Foscue hasn't kind of let you down doing that.
Yeah. He's mashing lefties.
So that's what I'm saying.
Dominant way.
Yeah. So you're kind of like, it's, wow, you got Peterson doing a great job, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, don't take him out. And Foscue gets in there. All of a sudden, Foscue leads a team like him and Durant in home runs during the month of June or and so it's crazy to think that they're having so much contribution from guys. I personally felt like why is this guy getting
does Berger already have the same amount of home runs this year that he had all of last year,
tied with the amount he hit a year ago? Has 16 of them. 812 OPS with runners in scoring positions, the fourth best of any AL player who's made at least 100 plate appearances in those situations, which isn't a lot of plate appearances at this point in the season. Jock 797 OPS overall, sixth best among American League DHs who've made at least 200 plate appearances.
Wow.
I think, Brian, to the point that you just made, is we were kind of looking at these guys like you just are keeping your fingers crossed because they don't have the resources or desire to go find replacements.
They don't. They don't. They're just they really did believe that their guys were going to come through. I mean, CY is always like, right now we're not playing well. I got faith in these guys. And he kept preaching that. And I kept going, and this is not, no.
You felt bad for him because it seemed like horrible luck had just intervened to make their World Series roster a train wreck. But at least this portion of it is saying we're not done yet.
I will say this, though. The with Semien, the trade to get Nemo, to get him, I think that was just played huge dividends. But I also think finding Nicky Lopez to play second base,
oh my gosh,
has been like, if you want to talk about a guy that really didn't get a whole lot of chances, you kind of get him up off the scrap heap, nobody really wanted him. Bassick talks about, and Bassick's right about this. This guy, and Jared's done it too, this guy's just a baseball player, man.
Yeah.
There's so many things he does on a daily basis that just helps you play winning baseball, whether it's in the field, running bases, getting base hits, taking a walk, turning a double play. I thought, how are they going to replace? Is it going to be Smith? Is Smith going to be the second baseman? Nah, man. This Nicky Lopez guy they got, he's been unreal.
Yeah, I'd crown him the championship glue guy right now if they go on and win the World Series, shock the world. Lopez is your Janko glue guy. Yeah.
There you go.
For this team.
Yeah.
100%. And the Elias Diaz signing as well. Those two right there.
I don't even think about Jansen anymore. When the catching situation, I'm not thinking about him at all. I'm like, I don't think I'm messing with my catching situation as is.
And other guys that we were counting out, like you mentioned, the Bergers and the Petersons and the Youngs and Ezekiel Duran. Like,
we're
in surprise, not even thinking, is he even going to make the team?
And that's how you can continue to play winning baseball with Seager done for, he doesn't bounce back. But as long as these guys can do what they've done for the first 90 games, do it again.
I don't think we're going to see Seager. It's just one of those weird gut feelings on this one.
Well, and it just doesn't add up.
No.
It's clear to me they were trying to manage that injury and keep him as available as he possibly could. And when you come back from 2 weeks for missing a concussion and your back is an issue again, then that means, something more structural.
I think there's more structural stuff
there. Josh Young's 297 average, third best in the AL. He has more games with multiple hits than he does with no hits this season. He's just been a model of consistency, and without him, he's been the driving force here with his offense. Without him, I think the Rangers be half dozen games below 500 at this point. Great job by Sean McFarland in the morning news putting this together. The rotation has taken a meaningful step back.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
So you've also had to overcome that.
Yeah.
The 4.26 ERA ranks 15th league-wide, and per FanGraphs, their 7.8 WAR ranks 10th after being the best rotation in baseball last year. And what the problem is the trio of right-handed pitchers, Leiter, a 5.29, Rocker, 4.89, and then the lefty, Mackenzie Gore at 4.63. They have the 3rd, 6th, and 8th highest earned run averages of all AL starters who've logged 50 innings or more. The 3rd, 6th, and 8th highest ERAs amongst AL starters who have logged 50 or more innings. That's tough. You know, nothing over 5, nothing over 6, but still those ERAs are you know, probably due for a correction. You could look at that and say these guys are young and unproven and have had ups and downs. Or you could also look at it and say, man, their best baseball is probably ahead of them here in 2026 because their stuff is too good, you know, to be struggling to that extent. Their biggest trade so far has been a win, though. And you mentioned the Nimmo trade in passing there, Brian, a few moments ago. And Semien for Nimmo. Nimmo has outpaced Semien in WAR, 1.8. to negative 0.6. Like, Semien's even worse.
Wow.
Than he was. The OPS numbers, the OPS plus, it's all, you know, in favor of that trade being an absolute home run. They're back underway at the stadium, Spain and France. Their roster does remain flawed in a major way. Bullpen being held together with inexperienced rookies. Actually, 5 rookies in the pen in the final couple of weeks before the break. And the 2 weeks before the break, their bullpen ERA hit 5.12 over about a 12-game span.
I think Martin.
Thanks, Chris Martin.
I think Martin being involved didn't help there.
Yeah, that didn't help. And, I think the good news is CY has shown the ability to microwave a bullpen and to keep coming up with answers. So I will have faith that as the trade deadline approaches here coming up in about 3 weeks or so, that if there's anything out there to be done, CY is going to, you know, be able to make that happen. I think you can compromise if Ray Davis, if ownership wants to not add payroll, doesn't feel like this is a team that deserves going forward in a major way because they aren't that good anymore. I think you could understand that from a front office perspective. Like, we can't do anything that sacrifices our medium to long term in favor of trying to win now. But you can find players that are available who are on the final year of their deals or under team control and not, you know, make significant financial commitments, you know, and still improve your team in a significant way. So looking forward to continuing to cover that and what our guy CY has in store. Of course, he joins us Mondays at 4:20 here on The Fan. All righty. How about a little football conversation? What if I asked you for the highest graded PFF individual seasons by position across the NFL? Would that be fun? Like, who's had the greatest PFF quarterback season of all time? You know the answer to that?
I would guess Mahomes.
Could be Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, Lamar.
Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, maybe.
I just go back to that 2018 Mahomes year that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there was some crazy.
When he could throw it deep and he had Kelsey in his prime and Hill. Yeah.
Was PFF involved with, didn't Aaron Rodgers have a year where.
Oh, yeah, Rodgers.
Where Rodgers won the MVP and he threw like 40 touchdowns and no interceptions or something like that.
Brian's all over it. He's got Aaron Rodgers. The 2020 campaign regarded as one of the best by a quarterback in league history. Yeah. Tossed 49 big-time throws to only 15 turnover-worthy plays, ranking top 3 in both rate categories. His adjusted completion percentage the highest in the league in the PFF era. And it was a 95.1, the best. Not far behind were Lamar Jackson in 2024, Tom Brady in 2016, two remarkable campaigns. Brady followed suit a year later with a 94.2. Peyton Manning and Drew Brees also reached 94 flat in 2007 and 2018, respectively. So you've had a handful of incredible seasons, but Aaron Rodgers at his peak there late in his Green Bay run. Do you think the Achilles, the torn Achilles, just nuked him? Is that what ultimately did it? Or was he kind of done, finished before then?
No, I mean, that was really the final nail in the coffin for sure.
Yeah.
That zapped him of any ability to be mobile. And that was one of the big things that he had that a guy like Brady didn't have.
Running back, top PFF running back grade of all time. Who would you guess?
Do we know how far back this goes?
I'm not sure. I could, but at least until 2007.
Okay. So then I would say Adrian Peterson or Saquon Barkley, what he just did Derrick Henry.
I think
all over it.
I would have said Barkley is who I would have said. And maybe it happened 2 years ago.
His 2024 Derrick Henry season at 94.1 holds it, although Saquon Barkley neck and neck for much of that season. Henry eclipsed Barkley in missed tackles, 87-80, yards after contact, 3.6 to 3.3, and explosive run rate, 14.4 to 12.6. Bijan Robinson has produced a 92.8 recently. Adrian Peterson hit a 92.4 in his MVP season in 2012. And just last year, Kenneth Walker's 91.4 with Seattle put him inside the top 10 running back seasons of all time there. Apparently not impressed or couldn't afford him because he's now with the Chiefs, right? Kenneth Walker?
Yeah, he is.
Zach Charbonnet and a Jadarian Price show. Wide receiver. The season actually just happened.
So Jackson Smith and Jigba kind of a thing?
Same division.
This would be...
Puka Nacua.
Puka Nacua, okay.
Although Nacua didn't win Offensive Player of the Year, he had just as good, if not of an argument, as Smith and Jigba. His 96.2 PFF receiving grade, powered by a monstrous 3.57 yards per route run.
Ooh.
The well-rounded Nacua incorporates almost every tool in his kit. Yeah, the 3.57 yards per route run, like, good starts at 2 or 1 and a half, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're feeling good if you're in the twos in terms of yards per route run. Well over 3. That has to be one of the best seasons ever for sure.
The last decade has featured a myriad of other incredible personal receiver seasons. Julio Jones, 93.5. Tyreek Hill, 93.4. That was in 2023 with Miami, actually. Cooper Kupp's 93 in 2021. Calvin Johnson maxed out at a 91.2 in 2011. Randy Moss and T.O. never surpassed 87. During their short stints in 2006 or later is the answer to that question. The PFF era apparently starts in 2006. Tight ends, George Kittle put up a 94.4 in 2019. Trent Williams is the best tackle season of all time at 96.6. Guards, Evan Mathis with the Eagles, and Chris Lindstrom with the Falcons are tied at a 95, and the best center season in the PFF era belongs to Jason Kelce, put up a 94-1 there in their first Super Bowl season. All righty, when we come back, it'll be time for the C-Note. We'll get you the Cowboys news of the evening. Keep an eye on this Spain-France contest, still 1-0 in the 56th minute with the Spaniards leading, and we're back with your Cowboys news here coming up in the G-Bag Nation.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.